We're on the air. Let's see how the broadcast gets from the studio to your home.
I just want to hear the music, that's all.
Is it too complicated to just keep my records in the category, okay? Just put the rock and roll in with the rock and roll. Put the R&B in with the R&B. I mean, you're not going to put Charlie Parker in with the rock and roll, would you?
What does it all mean?
I don't know. Who is Charlie Parker?
Yes!
Sounds Visual is a podcast featuring interviews and long-form conversations with DJs, crate diggers, record collectors, vinyl enthusiasts, beatmakers, producers, and musicians. All right, welcome back to another episode of Sounds Visual Radio. My name is Justin. Thanks for tuning back in. My guest on the podcast today is Chris Veltri, also known as Cool Chris, who is the owner of one of my favorite record stores in the whole country, San Francisco's Groove Merchant Records. Over the last 25 or so years, the name Groove Merchant itself has become synonymous with quality and has become a worldwide destination for producers, artists, DJs, beatmakers, and crate diggers. Chris's amazing musical taste and curation even earned him a shout out in Professor Booty from the Beastie Boys album Check Your Head. Whether you're looking for jazz, psych, Latin, disco, Brazilian, funk, soul, or rare groove, Chris is the guy to talk to. And talk to him we did. All right, let's chat with Cool Chris at Groove Merchant Records in San Francisco.
My name is Chris Veltri. I run and operate Groove Merchant Records in San Francisco, California. I turned the magic number of 50 years old this month, and it marks just about 25 years of me being in the Bay Area. I'm originally from Los Angeles, California. Santa Monica, to be exact, is where I grew up. I guess my intro into music was kind of my junior high school years. I unfortunately didn't really learn a whole lot from my folks. They were really encouraging in a lot of other ways artistically, but music wasn't one of them. I think I got one shitty record from my dad, which was the soundtrack to the movie 10 with Bo Derek. And he just bought it because he liked Bo Derek. But I guess my earliest influences and my gateway drug into the world of records was kind of my fascination with the two-tone ska movement that was happening kind of roughly at the time I was in junior high school in the early to mid 80s. And I got into bands like The Specials and The Selector and The English Beat. And then some of the groups that were coming out of LA that were kind of similar, like Fishbone. And kind of my earliest shows were like all along those lines, like early punk groups that were around LA that would kind of cross over into reggae. And then around the mid 80s, 86, I started really getting heavy into rap music. And those were some of the first shows that I went to were Burning Spear. I saw Fishbone, the Beastie Boys, the first time they came to LA, Public Enemy, the first time they came to LA. A lot of things were happening around Hollywood at the Hollywood Palladium. And those are some of the best shows to this day that I've ever seen. They were just pretty kind of revolutionary in the sense that they were putting rap and rock records, I mean, rap and rock groups together. Like, it was always Fishbone and the Red Hot Chili Peppers that would kind of like be the glue that put together the two scenes. So you'd see like, you would see Public Enemy and you'd see a band like the Vandals or maybe even Black Flag. They would just put together these things that you, these groups that you didn't think would really work together, but since it was Hollywood, it somehow worked great, and the shows were always really fun, and a lot of times they would end in just some gang bullshit, but most of the time they were really fun. And kind of through these scenes is where I started to get into records and meet kind of like-minded heads that we would trade and, you know, go to each other's houses and get turned on to new stuff. Just out of high school, I really started to get into Latin music, and kind of what was starting to be called rare groove. And a few of my friends just out of high school, when I graduated in 89, moved up to San Francisco, and I would come to visit them. And a couple of my friends were like, you should check out this record store that's on Hay Street called the Groove Merchant. I think it's your cup of tea. And when I first came in, the shop was one block up from where it is now. It was on the 500 block of Hay Street. Where we're at now is 687 Haight, one block south, or one block east on Haight. And at the time when the original location was open, there really wasn't any shop that I had been to, or even a shop in America that really existed that was similar to it. It was based on what the original owners, Mike and Jody McFadden, thought a British rare groove shop looked like. And at the time, rare groove and acid jazz, what they called back then, was like, it was this kind of new genre of music to a lot of American ears that was like really an amalgamation of things that sounded like James Brown, jazz funk artists like Lonnie Liston Smith or Lou Donaldson, but mostly things that sounded like James Brown. There was, you know, a lot of things that were kind of fairly new that had been around since the 70s, but never really rediscovered. Things like Simondi and things that were popping up on Ultimate Breaks and Beat compilations. And really it was an interesting time because a lot of these records had never really been rediscovered. They were kind of just coming into the forefront, you know, 25, 30 years after the fact. And, you know, new discoveries were being made, you know, almost daily. And then at the same time, there was this kind of symbiotic relationship happening because hip hop was kind of at the forefront and sample based music was at the forefront. And it was really a really groundbreaking time as far as sampling music was going, because all the people that were pioneering shit were doing it right then and there. And the Groove Merchant itself was kind of like, it was kind of a West Coast beacon to anybody that was into that shit. So if you walked into the Groove Merchant around 1989 when it opened, 1990, like me, I think I walked in here in 1991 was the first time I came in here. And it was like, I just couldn't believe a store like this existed. They had this wall, and I remember exactly what was on the wall. There was like all the James Brown records on People, Simondi, Lorel, William Devon, just things like that, classics nowadays. But back then they were just called Rare Groove Records. And I just stared at this wall like, these are all records I had heard about and I'd never seen them before. So it was just a life-changing experience. So I didn't have much money back then, but I handed them everything that was in my wall and I just took home whatever I could. And every time I came back to San Francisco, it'd be the first place I'd go and just empty my wallets. I'd end up hanging out here with friends for 3 days, completely broke, and, you know, living off whatever, you know, food I could steal out of the refrigerator or whatever. But it was just a really fun time, because one thing to remember was this was pre-internet, so information was pretty limited. So everything everything was new to my eyes and to my ears. And, you know, back then record stores were kind of secret. You know, if you had a secret spot, you kept it a secret. So there was, there was just tons of record stores out there that, you either happenstance found just driving, or if you're lucky, it was in a phone book, but you really had no way to find these places. You'd have to get in the car and drive. LA, I was still, living in LA. I just had bought some turntables with my old roommate, and through some local groups, there was a really great group named Jump with Joey, and the leader of the group, this guy Joey Altruda, was like, yeah, if you want to open up for a band DJing and in between sets, feel free, we can't pay you, but it'll be a good time and we'll give you drink tickets. And we drag all our shit down there, all our records, our turntables set up and DJ for free, just because it seemed like the fun thing to do and a good way to learn. And these guys were great. They taught me a lot about music. And I go over to Joey's house, and he kind of knew everybody on the scene. He knew a lot of old players, a lot of jazz musicians. He had people like Coxone Dodd from Studio One would just come over and visit him, and just interesting guys. And his band was like a mix of Latin rock steady and Afro-Cuban jazz. So that's what I would DJ. And when I moved to the Bay Area, out of sheer luck, a spot opened up at the Groove Merchant, and the owners of the shop at the time, Mike and Jody, were like, hey, you would be a good fit. We know about you, because at the time I used to review their records for this magazine called Herb that I had, like a column that I would just kind of write about things that I like or records that I picked up. And it was all kind of rare groove centric. And I would talk about their records a lot and praise the shop and what they were doing up here, because they had a label that they ran called Love and Hate and another label called Ubiquity. When I moved up here, this spot at the shop opened up. So I looked into it, and, I've been here ever since. It's been 25 years. And about shortly a year or two after I started working, they decided to sell the shop. And I was a little too young and green to realize that I could actually possibly take out a loan and buy it myself. They offered it to me, but they ended up selling it to this guy, and he had managed it for about 2 years. And then I ended up buying the shop in 1997. And since 97, it's been my shop. But the store's relatively stayed the same. It's still what you would call somewhat of a rare groove shop. We still sell the exact same records we sold since we started, which is, anything from James Brown to Latin records on Fania to disco records. We got a strong hip hop section. We got an international section that consists of Brazilian records, Asian records, Latin music, all forms of Latin music, African records. We have a very strong blues section, psychedelic rock section, folk country. We've kind of expanded musically a little bit, but it's still basically the same shop as when it opened its doors. One of the things about the Groove Merchant and its history with hip hop and sample based music specifically is, as I mentioned earlier, it was one of the early shops that really was pushing things that were geared towards hip hop or DJs and certainly producers. So early on, the Beastie Boys discovered the store and shouted out Mike and Professor Booty. But, you know, since then, that was probably around 1991 or somewhere right around Check Your Head was coming out. But since then, the store has always been kind of a mainstay for producers and people that really took sample-based music seriously. And over the years, I've been lucky enough to meet pretty much all the greats. I would consider, you know, people that put music into an MPC or an SP-12. Just about all of the DITC members have been here. Pete Rock, Biz, Q-Tip, all the West Coast guys, Pet Chemist, Shadow, Fez. You know, pretty much everybody that's made a beat through a sampler I've met at some point through the shop. And it's always been a really great connection, because producers in general, they understand the magic and the pure emotion that can come out of just hearing a record for the first time and hearing something on that that could translate into something that they may or may not be working on. It's a hard thing to articulate to somebody that really got into records during the internet age, but pre-internet, when a lot of the early sampling was being pioneered, it was just a magical time, because you would make discoveries in a record store. You'd see something and you would take it home with you, and that record would become something so personal and so magic because you felt like you discovered it. And for a long, long time, and still to this day, a record shop could be a place where it was almost like, you know, poor man's archaeology. You could walk into a record store and for $5, you can make an amazing discovery. You can find something that just was like so meaningful and so deep and so personal. And it was something that you really, you know, it felt like something all your own. And, you know, that's the connection that a lot of producers have when they come into the store. It's like they understand the importance of finding something that, you know, is really rare and unique. And those are the kind of records that we've always really, really gone after here. Small label things, whether you call them vanity records or private press things, things that really never left the regional territory that they came out of. Those are the things that we've always championed and always kind of searched for and encouraged people to bring to us when they come to visit the stores, things from their neck of the woods that you probably wouldn't see unless you either knew it, you bought it from somebody, you bought it from a dealer from that area, or, you know, you had some connection. These are the things that just don't end up in record stores. You really have to put in a little time and effort to get them. And that's the thing that really, for a long time, separated us from a lot of record stores, because it was really, it's not that it was an elitist store, but it was a store that had a really, really supreme focus. We've always really looked for things that were a little outside the box. And to this day, that's, you know, something we try to really push here is, you know, unique records. I think a lot of people that come here for the first time are expecting a bigger store. And, you know, I actually prefer having a small store, because it makes me kind of keep things moving and keep a focus. And, you know, if you get to know me and you get to know the store, it's a shop that I really work hard to make people, I work hard to make it inclusive and make people feel at home when they're in here. And, you know, it's all about sharing and, you know, not playing your cards too close. I really get a kick out of turning people onto records. And, you know, thankfully for me, this is a really good city for records. You know, there's a lot of scenes here, and there has been a lot of scenes over the years. So there's, you know, a really diverse cross-section of records that end up in the Bay Area. And, you know, it's always, I never wanted to be that guy that, like, you know, you walk into the record store and you leave the record store and you say, like, what a fucking asshole. That guy, you know, he had such an attitude. And, you know, I just never wanted to be like that. There were stores that I went to when I was younger, and there was, you know, I certainly felt intimidated, and there were stores that I never went back to because they were just fucking assholes. And there were stores that I would go to and I get turned on, and, you know, certain guys would take me under their wing and say, hey, you know, check this out. This, you know, I know you, and I've watched what you bought. This looks like your cup of tea. And I always, you know, I wanted to be that guy, you know, like that, that was kind of my position on opening a record store, was be, you know, learn from the people around you and, you know, spread the love.
Chris, if you've got some time to spare before we let you go, I'd love to hear about some records that are especially meaningful to you.
One record that I really just never tired of is Giant Steps by John Coltrane. It's just, you know, for obvious reasons, a beginning to end burner. And it's something that emotionally can uplift me just about any time I put it on. But it's just so deep on so many levels. And it's kind of hard to imagine that a record like that, a record with no words and no lyrics, can be so emotional and, you know, take you someplace. And, you know, really, it's probably been one of the only records I've listened to, or one of the only artists I've listened to purely instrumental, that's made me cry just by how deep he gets. So that'd be one. I really like this record by Sabu Martinez called Afro Tempo, which is really heavy. There's something about it. It's like, it was actually a record that I bought at Groove Merchant before I started working here. And it's always had a, like, it's another record that always puts me in a good mood. And it's kind of deep on a lot of levels. It gets funky. It gets like ethereal and mystic at times. And it's really a great record. And the story is cool. It's a, you know, he was a New York guy that actually recorded on Blue Note. He recorded on Legre. He was one of the first Latin artists that really like was hired to give kind of a Afro-Cuban edge to jazz musicians. And he would pop up on a lot of jazz records. And then at some point when he moved to Europe, specifically Sweden. And then I think in the 70s, he opened a percussion school and made Afro-Tempo with his students. And it's pretty amazing. Moving on from there, I think I would probably have at least a couple Studio One records. I've been listening to a lot of the reggae albums that I used to listen to when I first got into reggae lately, like Linton Kwesi Johnson, Gregory Isaacs, Night Nurse. Those records are just like, they're so ingrained in my youth that when I listen to them now, they just always put me in a good mood. So something like that. Possibly Horace Andy.
Done.
office, where we live. Lonnie Liston Smith Expansions is another no-brainer for me. Listening to a lot of kind of the more folkier side of blues. I have a tendency to go the blues direction kind of late at night. I've been listening to a lot of the Jazzland and Bluesland records that came out. Those are really good. Perhaps my favorite blues record of all time, Mississippi, Fred McDowell. I don't play no rock and roll.
You make me weak, and you make me mock. Well, you called me to leave my address. But someday, you ain't gonna worry my life anymore. You told everybody in your neighborhood I was a dirty mistreater. Give me news. But someday you ain't gonna worry my life anymore.
The first Simondi record.
I don't wanna feel down. My name is getting around. I say the whole world is letting me down now. Cause I don't know where I'm bound. Yes, I guess I'm going down, down, down. And I feel I'm gonna drown. Yeah, I guess I'm going down, down, down.
As far as soul records, I might pull Wheeze, Do You Want to Ride on My Airplane? A really, really incredible private press Ohio soul record that I never seem to get tired of listening to. Before COVID hit, I learned that Instagram was actually, I've never really been an eBay seller or even really a Discog seller, but I found this really cool middle ground with Instagram where things that were in the shop that I kind of thought were visually tremendous or really strong in some kind of graphic or visual sense, that Instagram was like a really great place to showcase that because it seemed to translate well on there. So kind of maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I got kind of disciplined about putting things up, not so much selling things, but just talking about things. And once COVID hit and I had to shut down the shop, and the store is actually still shut. I'm really only doing appointments until I can get the vaccine, but Instagram was really a great place for me to sell things during COVID. And it's been kind of a discipline for me to try to put things up once a day and keep things moving through that outlet. And it's been really great. And then I started another account that kind of highlights my art background and my photography background and kind of things that I'm into counterculture related, whether it be books, photographs, found photos, posters, prints, kind of real people and DIY artwork, things like that. And it kind of ties into my sense of humor and kind of the non-record things that I collect or that kind of fall into my sphere. But that's the account for that is Collage Dropout SF. And I usually run things daily, tandem on both of those. And they kind of, people that know me kind of know that they're both me and they both kind of intersect in a funny way. So those have been really good. And the other thing that I've started over the last 3 or 4 years is to really kind of start pushing paper and ephemera through the store. And it's a fun way to tell a story. A lot of things come out of the woodwork through print that are interesting and unique unto themselves. So that's been another fun outlet. And we've been doing some really good books through the shop and through some friends. And those things are all kind of spotlighted and talked about first on Instagram. So yeah, Groove Merchant SF on IG is a great place to start. We do have a Facebook account. I'm rarely on it. Shit got kind of weird politically when the Orange Man jumped into office and we had that dipshit to fend with. So I kind of stayed off Facebook for a while. But yeah, those are pretty much as far as internet activity goes. Those are places where you can catch us first. We're just groovemerchantsf.com is the website, and you can find basic information about the shop, a lot of photos, and I update it with kind of some blog posts from time to time, although it's been a minute. The website is just groovemerchantsf, same as Instagram. And our alternate account on IG is Collage Dropout SF. Anybody that's in the city can come by and visit me. I'm usually keeping my hours are pretty loose. So I'm usually down here at 11 and I'll usually cut early afternoon, about 3:30. Our boy Fabian and sometimes Benji, who's here in the shop with me, put in some hours. But if anybody wants to come by, they can set up an appointment with me through Instagram or they can email me. So I can meet anybody down here, but I've usually been just keeping it pretty low key, 1 to 2 people at a time. Yeah, I still got some old people in my life, so I've been really kind of cautious. And, you know, being on Hay Street, it's really hard to open the gate because you will get people coming in and it's a small shop. And it's still a little too dicey to open the door, so I've been keeping it pretty low key.
All right, Chris. Well, thanks so much for your time today. It's been awesome to get to hear about your story and the story of Groove Merchant Records. And hopefully I'll get to come by the shop sometime soon once this whole pandemic ends.
Yeah, no sweat, man. Thanks for your time as well, and keep the faith, and I look forward to hearing it.
Take care of yourself, Chris.
Yeah, you as well. Take care, man. Wrap soon.
For an archive of Sounds Visual Radio episodes, please visit our website at soundsvisualradio.com. You can find us on Instagram at Sounds Visual Media. You can find us on Facebook at Sounds Visual PDX, or you can email us at soundsvisualradio@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.